And still on robots, bigger ones this time, can you imagine anything more cruel than getting a poor, romantically driven creature all set to show off to a chick, loaded with presents, and then falling for a dummy? What's worse is that Gail Petrocelli is doing this with Australians in Queensland, with bowerbirds.
I worked on the satin bowerbirds. I worked at a field site called Wallaby Creek, just inland from Brisbane, about an hour and a half.
And you designed your robot birds, presumably, before you actually turned up in the site?
No. So I spent one field season, one spring breeding season, out at the field site in Wallaby Creek watching the real bird behaviors and videotaping them. And then I flew home to the University of Maryland at the time, where I was a graduate student, and worked with an engineer there to design and build the robots. And then I brought the robotic innards of the robot back out to Australia with me, where I dressed it up in female satin bowerbird skins and then started conducting the experiments.
What did the robot have to do? I mean, how did you design it?
The male satin bowerbirds put on this wonderful display, song and dance around their bowers and their decorations, but females are the choosy ones. So when you're studying a species like that where they're not monogamous, but the males and females aren't both choosy about their mates, it's really only the females that are choosy. And so that means the bar is set pretty low in terms of making her realistic. So all our robot had to do, it had to look like a satin bowerbird. It looked back and forth. It also crouched downwards into sort of a squatted position. And that was the signal that I was interested in manipulating. But she didn't need to be able to fly. I put her in the bower where courtship would normally happen. So I put the female in the bower. And then when the male would show up down to his bower, there was already a female there and he would begin courting her.
And what did he do to display?
The males have this fantastic, well, they usually pick up a yellow leaf or something yellow that complements their blue plumage, and they'll do a fantastic song and dance where they'll buzz and whir and run back and forth across the bower platform while spreading out their wings and puffing up their feathers. So it's a very intense song and dance.
Can you see it when the males are doing that sort of thing, the difference between a good male and a less good male in performance?
The amazing thing about these guys is we could walk around the valley and in the most obvious difference among males was in their quality of their bower. The guys with the good bowers, they were beautiful to our eyes as well. They're very symmetrical, they're well woven, there's a lot of intricate design in the bower. And they also had just a beautiful platform filled with decorations, lots of blue colors and yellows and snail shells and cicada shells and all sorts of things like that. It was really obvious to us. We could walk around the valley and think, you know, that guy's, he's getting some luck there, whereas this guy probably is not mating at all. But then when they do their intense song and dance, every once in a while you can see a guy that's just terrible at it. But the good guys don't necessarily just jump out as far superior to the other guys. But the bowers are very easy for us to tell the difference. The differences between the intense song and dances that the males do are a little bit more subtle, and I think you have to be a female bowerbird to truly appreciate the difference among males there.
Yeah, with birds, the female birds making a selection based on these various things, like a collection of blue bits for the bower, or a dirty great big tail in the peacock, you wonder what it is in those signals that makes a difference for them. Because surely it doesn't make a better husband or a father in any way.
Yes, in many species that are monogamous, the female is trying to choose a male that not only has he got good genes that she can pass on to her offspring, but he's also going to make a better parent and help her raise the young. He's got a nice territory that they're going to have their nest on and find food on. But in the bowerbirds and species like this, which is really a minority in birds, that they're not monogamous, or at least socially monogamous, paired up and raising the young together. In these species, the female really isn't shopping for the male that's going to be the best parent. She seems to be shopping for males that are going to have better genes that she can then pass on through her to their offspring, that they can pass on the genes together. And so she may be preferring males that have better genes for immune quality or something like that, or that just are going to make sexier sons for the female. She's going to have more attractive male offspring. It's also possible that she's looking for some sort of direct benefit, something that will directly increase her fecundity, like avoiding males that are covered in parasites, or so she doesn't get some sort of STD or something like that. So there are some sort of direct things as well that might not be genetically transmitted. But unfortunately, in this system, we haven't really been able to nail down exactly what's being conveyed by those signals. There are some other species where people can really work that out, but these guys don't thrive in captivity, and so it's been a little bit more difficult to tease that apart. But we do know that the more successful males have fewer parasites on them, so there's some hints that that might be important.
But if you're healthy, you can go out and collect. It's just the connection between genes and lots of blue things in your bower that isn't necessarily obvious. But if you can go out and collect those, then that presumes you're healthy and active.
So blue is pretty rare in the environment out there. There are a few blue and purple flowers that they'll collect, but their favorite blue decoration, if there's no people around, if there's people around, they have ballpoint pens. They used to steal our blue toothbrushes and all sorts of things. But if there's no people around, then it's crimson Rhodesella tail feathers are their favorite decoration. They're bright UV, they're beautiful feathers. And so those are pretty rare in the environment. So they spend quite a while looking for them, but not only do they have to find them, they have to keep them. So neighboring males will maraud around, they'll land at their neighbor's bower, destroy the bower, and steal his decorations and bring them back to their own. So we marked all the little feathers and other decorations, and you'd see them moving back and forth from bower to bower. So they have to be able to find a good cache and then defend it. And so the combination of those things, you're going to get some vigorous, aggressive males that are able to accomplish that. When a little dude finally molts into adult plumage and builds his first bower, he typically gets beat up constantly. His neighboring males will just keep pummeling him. These guys can live to be 25, 26 years old. So their first year or so, they often get beat up quite a bit. So it's really the experience, but also these more aggressive males that can maintain a good bower.
Competition by proxy. Yes. Okay, you made your robots and you look at the bower birds. Have you developed the robots for any other kind of bird here in the States, for instance?
Yes, so I've been working on greater sage grouse since I got started on my position at UC Davis. They're a little bit closer to home. I love bower birds and I miss them, but the sage grouse are a little closer to home, and similar to bower birds, the males put on a fantastic show and the females are extremely choosy. So I've been interested in studying similar questions to those that I studied with the bower birds, that the degree to which males have to not just put on the best show with biggest, flashiest ornaments, but also be able to interact appropriately with the opposite sex during courtship. And in the greater sage grouse, the males put on this fantastic song and dance for the females. It's very elaborate, very unusual looking display. And they have to not only have the loudest, most rapid display, but they also need to be able to adjust it during courtship in order to basically save their energy to put on the best show when it's most likely to influence female choice. And so I've had a robotic female that I've used in those studies as well, and she's a little bit bigger bird. She's a chicken-sized bird, so there's a little bit more room to work on the inside, and so she's outfitted with a little mini microphone at ear level and a video camera on board so that we can literally get inside the head of a female on this display ground and see courtship as she sees it. So that gives us a fun research tool. Not only fun, but it allows us to see things that would be impossible to see otherwise. But more importantly, it allows us to manipulate one side of the complex conversation that males and females have as they negotiate during courtship and measure how males vary and how they respond to female signals and whether the more responsive males are the most successful.
What about these poor responsive males? I mean, I begin to wonder, having put in all that effort to a robot, do they look crestfallen and confused and go away sulking?
In the bower birds, they actually mated with the robot. So it was part of my experimental protocol, actually. That was when I defined the end of courtship, when the male tried to jump on top of my robot to mate with her. And I found that the males were doing some damage to the robot. So as soon as that happened, I ran out and scared them away. So as far as they were concerned, they actually convinced a female to mate with them. And then they got disrupted by somebody that, you know, came out of nowhere and scared them away. So I don't really know exactly what was going on in their little brains, but I wouldn't expect them to be crestfallen. But the sage grouse, they're very gentlemanly, and they will continue courting the robot, and they won't try to mate with her. They'll just keep courting and courting and courting, and then I'll bring the female back into the blind when the experiment's over. And this happens all the time for these guys. It's usually only a few males out there that get to breed during the breeding season. Most males don't mate at all. So this is nothing different than their normal experience, that they would be courting a female and that she would then walk away uninterested in them. And it's not that unusual an experience. But we did have one male during both years of the study with the robotic sage grouse that every time the female would get near him, he rushed right over to her and tried to jump on her. And that was most unfortunate because she rides on train tracks, and so she derailed. And so that wasn't good. So it was a good thing that he was the only one that tried that. The other guys were much more friendly towards her.
And after all that experimenting, what have you really learned from this?
What I've learned is that in order to be successful in courtship, and I think this is very intuitive if we're talking about humans, right? But we're not. We're talking about birds. But in order to be successful, it's not just the male with the longest tail, the flashiest ornaments. It's also the ability to interact socially and adjust their behaviors on the fly in response to female signals and other behaviors during courtship. So sexual selection, this process that Darwin first described, can drive the evolution of these flashy traits like the peacock's tail, but also this kind of social intelligence, these courtship tactics that are also an important part of competition for mates. So sexual selection might be a lot more powerful than we initially assumed.
And I can confirm that, a lot more powerful, poor guys. Watch out for robots at the party tonight. Professor Gail Petrocelli is at the University of California, Davis.